Hey guys, welcome back to the Modern Songwriter Project podcast. I know I haven't done these in a long time because I've been busy, right? And you know, the reason why I do these, I don't do these just to do them. Like, you know, I've been busy and things haven't really interested me in a while, and there really hasn't been a reason to talk to anybody. But now, here we go. If you remember a couple of years ago, Lane, you know, a couple of years ago, right? We talked to Lane. Yeah, we talked to Lane Grease. At that time, you were a purple belt, and I think you got second at Worlds, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep, that's right? Exactly what it was. Yep.
Yep. And were you a master or a GM back then?
I would have been a GM then, yeah.
Bad GM then. So here's the thing. I mean, if you've been following me for a while, you know I've been asking if anybody knows a person that is a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt and a grandmaster, and it's just been crickets. I guess there was a story of a, like a LAPD SWAT or something like that, but nobody cares. Anyway, so according to my research, right, I'm sure the internet will correct me if I'm wrong, Lane, you are the first verified Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt who is also a USPSA grandmaster. And if someone comes out of the woodwork, you are the only one that competes both at a super high level, at least of what you have done in jiu-jitsu, and a super high level in carry optics and use to shoot limited, right?
Back in the XD days.
Yeah, there you go. setting the internet on fire. So, Lane, other than that, man, tell the audience about yourself, of those people that don't know who you are.
No, I mean, you pretty much got it. You know, I've been doing jiu-jitsu now. I started in college after the Marine Corps. I started jiu-jitsu in 2008. I was like an 8.5-year white belt. Part of it's because I never really trained at like a school that had an instructor. You know, it was always kind of either an MMA gym or whatever. And then I started doing, let me think here. So I shot my first USPSA match in 2016, but I like immediately tore my bicep and blew my knee out. So I basically consider 2017 my first year of like actual, like, you know, competing regularly, like in USPSA, and pretty much, yeah, just been real serious about both in that time period. And I'm definitely much more credentialed as a shooter than I am as a jiu-jitsu guy. But yeah, I found a way to balance doing both. You know, not even like a lot. I think I've struck a good balance where one keeps me from burning out in the other, and you know, keeps me feeling like I, you know, want to train something day to day. So,
okay, cool. So, especially people that have been in my class and follow me and stuff like that, you know, I always talk about the balance of that. Of that's great, you can do it with a gun, but can you do it with your hands? I actually make fun of people that don't do jiu-jitsu, right? Because, you know, you're more likely to do it with your hands than you are your gun, but learn how to do everything, you know, at a pretty good level. So let me, I'm going to ask you about that, right? Since you've technically hit, you know, the classification highest in both of those, right? People always try and make these equivalencies. I think they're false equivalencies between USPSA classifications and jiu-jitsu belts, right? So for example, I'm going to ask you this, and you know, obviously answer however you want. Even if you think I'm full of shit, obviously, right? So people go, well, you know, a B-class guy is a blue belt, a grandmaster is the same as a jiu-jitsu black belt. I call horseshit on that, right? Because here's why. If I trained four times, if anybody, right, trained four times a week with a grandmaster in a 6 month to a year period, could they also be a grandmaster? To that, I say yes. If that's all you did, 3 to 4 days a week, 2 hours a time, yada, yada, would they be a jiu-jitsu blue belt in that same time? The answer is no, right? So I don't know. What you feel about that, man?
No, I think you're basically correct on that. I think the jiu-jitsu side of things, or just combat sports in general, it's very subjective, whereas USPSA, at least as far as classifications go, is very objective. Like there's just an actual number standard, you know, percentage standard, based on classification scores, whether they are from actual classifier stages or from shooting major matches and having your percentages count towards classifications on that. So no, I think that's right. And I'm trying to think of like the correct words for it. It's not that I think that shooting is quote unquote more technically demanding than, you know, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu or fighting or whatever. but it's more specifically technically demanding. Cause you could get somebody in who's like just a stud muffin athlete, younger guy, you know, whatever else. And, you know, they could rip through a lot of like otherwise like quote unquote better jujitsu people or better fighters or whatever, you know, like that, because you're bringing a whole bunch of subjectivity into it. Whereas like in jujitsu or sorry, in shooting, it's like the opposite of that. You know, it's like you have to come in and shoot specific score. So you either do that or you don't. So I don't do the subjectivity, you know, as far as the classification or the belt levels. And I don't really do much. Maybe there's some crossover between like, cause people ask me like, oh, you know, like how does competing in one help you in the other or vice versa? And I'm like, man, they're like not the same like at all.
Okay.
You know, cause it's like in shooting or at least in USPSA, as far as matches, you're not actually competing against the other person. You're both competing against the stage is basically how it comes down. So it's like, I guess you could say in a way, it's like, let's say you go and, you know, you and I are like, you know, dead heat, you know, totally even competitors, and you go and run a stage and you do it a certain way and you get a certain result. I mean, I could see that and I could make an adjustment like, hey, you know, Scott really fucked this one up. Okay, cool. I'm going to choose my conservative plan and just get some good points. Or I could be like, man, he knocked this one out of the park, but he kind of did this, which is a little risky. I'm just going to take a good plan. No, I'm going to give up a few points and then move on to the next stage kind of thing, you know, which is just different. You know, as far as, you know, that's kind of the only way that you can kind of directly compete. Whereas like grappling or jiu-jitsu or whatever is like different. Like at some point, like you and I literally have to go wrestle each other or fight each other.
Right.
You know? Yeah. So I think it's definitely different that way.
Okay. Do you feel there's any crossovers though, like work ethic, drilling, technique based, principle based? What are the crossovers though, if there are, you think there are any?
Yeah, no, that's a good question. Like I think if I had to try to think of the things that are like, you know, crossover is, I think that shooting is more mentally demanding, and I'm trying to think of like one very specific word, which I don't have for it, which is because like most of a shooting match is not shooting. You're just standing around, you're pasting targets, you're doing whatever. And then when you get up to a stage, you literally, like you cannot make time up on a stage. And that's different. I mean, you know, not, you know, let's say like, again, we're in a jiu-jitsu match. It's like, yeah, you know, if I get down early, I might not be able to make those up. But technically speaking, if I go out, you take me down right away, you know, I could work back to my feet or whatever, take you back down, or I could work to my guard sweep. Like I can technically get myself back into the match in some ways, you know, but you can't do it in shooting. Like let's say you go out and you overrun a target or you have to take makeups or whatever. There is no physical way to go back and take time off. Like you can't do it.
And when you try to, you wind up fucking up.
Yeah. The only way people try to do it is, and again, it's not even like they're not actually taking time off. They're just trying to reduce the future time. So it's like, you can't go back and like undo, you know, some of that. You know, so I think it's a difference, but what I do think there's some comparative things, at least for me, is I've kind of figured out that, you know, I do jiu-jitsu typically 3 days a week. So you typically do Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday at varying times of the year. I might go in on Wednesdays as well, kind of depending. And then shooting wise, I typically shoot live Wednesdays, Fridays, Sundays, at least, you know, the parts of the year, like, you know, where I'm able to do it. I'm not really able to do that right now. And then I might dry fire on like Mondays, you know, and load ammo and stuff like that. And I've found for me, it seems to be, it's roughly a 50-50 balance where like having that amount makes me kind of fresh for the other one and it keeps me going. Whereas like prior to Nationals this year, I guess, so they moved Carry Optics Nationals to June. Don't get me started on that whole cluster, but you know, so I'm like, you know, for guys in the upper Midwest, it's like, okay, you know, you can only really rely on being able to get out to the range and shoot outdoors maybe starting like late March or April. Like, you know, you could kind of pick up days here and there, but you couldn't reliably be like, hey, I could go out 3 days a week every week in March, you know? So then, you know, I was kind of like, you know, I switched to the Shadow too. So I switched a different gun, you know, last season, and I was just going like super hard, like trying to get ready. You know, I kind of wanted, I was like, hey, either be about it or don't be about it kind of year. And I kind of got to, I don't know when I got into May or something like that, you know? And I was like, you know, I'm like, screw it. Like, you know, you read how other people prepare for different sports or whatever. And I was like, man, screw it. I was like, every day that you have available, go out to the range. So I was shooting live, you know, 5 days a week. The jiu-jitsu stuff, I would go in and I might like teach technique or like kind of run class from a structure standpoint, but I wasn't like doing jiu-jitsu because I was like, hey, I don't, you know, if I'm shooting every day, I don't want to, you know, mess my hands up or whatever. And then we had our local level two, the Cornhusker Classic. And I wasn't honestly, like, I don't say this like I'm trying to give myself an excuse. I wasn't honestly trying to win that match. I was trying to run about 10% too fast on all the stages, like still kind of trying to be in like a, you know, like, you know, kind of that like supra maximal performance curve kind of thing, you know, getting close to nationals. And I just, man, I didn't feel like I wanted to be there. Like I never could like mentally get myself into it. It felt really weird. Mm. And so a shot on Sunday and I was like, screw it. I'm like, I feel kind of like burned out after doing that. So I went back immediately Tuesday, did jiu-jitsu. Thursday, did jiu-jitsu, still on the range. Wednesday, Friday, that next weekend, went and shot Kansas Free State sectional down in Kansas City, absolutely destroyed it and felt fantastic. And I was like, okay, I apparently am not a person who can do like, hey, every single day, 100% focus on this one thing. It just, I don't know, you know, it overloads me, burns me out, whatever the word is for it. So for me, like, I've got to have that, like, you know, kind of left seat, right seat balance with the jiu-jitsu stuff and with the shooting. So that was kind of, you know, I guess something to learn, but
That's super cool because people are like, well, I don't want one to cannibalize the other. Right. And I don't think we're disagreeing. What I say, like, I think one flows into the other, right? When you understand a body mechanic, whether starting with jiu-jitsu or shooting, it translates into the other one because the body works the way the body works, right? One is much more physically demanding than the other one. I think one is more, I can't even say if it's more mentally demanding, but it's more mentally precise, I think, of where you're right. You can't make mistakes. You can't make things up. So you have to have that, you know, that on-demand level of skill throughout where, for example, if you're rolling or even if you're competing, if you mess up or you get on top and you got points, you can hide for a little bit if you know how to play the game, where you can't do that in USPSA. So, okay, awesome. So that's interesting, right? So one stimulates you to do the other instead of cannibalizing from the other. Okay.
And that I think there's a balance to it because I think, and obviously, like, I'm kind of, I'm an outlier when it comes to that, you know, is like, I think there's definitely ways people can set it up to, like, one, obviously, if you have, like, you know, limited free time. I mean, we all have some amount of limited time, but I think, you know, I like training in the gi, but I kind of stay away from the gi between like March and the end of September just because I know that the gi messes my fingers up. Yeah. And I cannot prove this, but, and again, I try to like make this sound like I'm not just giving myself excuses for technical deficiencies, if that's what it is. But like I've noticed, I don't relax my shooting hand particularly well. I kind of have a couple of like grip related cues to do, like when I like get on the gun and like run a, you know, a drill or a stage or whatever to kind of help me do that. And I think it's because I spend so much time wrestling and doing jiu-jitsu. I think if you do the gi, I think it exacerbates that, you know. And I don't think you can spend all day like this, where everything you do is just that 100% of the time, and then be like, all right, now when you go do this other thing, just let this one be like loose and floating around while this one's clamped. I don't know that it works that way. I don't think you can be that particular.
Or what's the amount of work you got to put in to be able to do that, right?
Yeah.
Getting on, so on technical skills on that. So what's your, when you're going all out, right? What are your splits like looking like these days in practice when you're just working on moving that trigger?
I'm the least impressive split person ever. I mean, I have a shadow two now. So, I mean, I have a single action. And I mean, I would say, like, my goal and what I can kind of get to is to be able to probably run like 17s or 18s for splits.
Yeah.
Like purposefully and like on like match targets. Whereas this was kind of actually an issue. Like, you know, like when I was, it was the previous year when I was in, you know, one of Steger's classes is like, he's like, hey, I've never told anybody to get a lighter trigger before, but I'm going to tell you to get a lighter trigger because, you know, it's like, I would split 21s on everything. Like, I mean, like, you know, I would just like, that was about as, I mean, I could physically make the gun go faster if I was really, really trying, but it's like, if I was running a stage or drills, every target for me was a 21. And it was just like, I don't think splits, you know, are nearly the end all be all or anything like that. But one thing I kind of noticed is there's kind of a trade-off when you get in that 21, 22 versus you get in that like kind of 17, you know, 18 range. Well, you'll catch yourself where, like, let's say I'm moving and shooting like, you know, two at a target, you'll start to catch 2 foot impacts versus 1 foot impact, or just like small things that probably don't really mean anything in like the real world. But like shooting wise, it's just like, it's kind of noticeable that like I would get stuck kind of halfway through targets and notice small things like that. So yeah, trying to just, you know, split a little bit quicker, you know, to be able to like, and it's not just to like burn targets, but to notice that like I can move through arrays a little bit like more seamless. If I could hit 2 or 3 targets with only 2 foot impacts, that's different than like getting stopped up, you know, with like almost a, like every round, like, you know, foot impact kind of thing. And if that makes
so that's sense. That does make sense. So two observations. I'll get back to my own recent split journey. But so what you're saying, because you're a big dude, right? I'm 270, right? How big are you,
Lane? 230.
You're 230. Okay, I'm getting back down there. I'm working my ass off.
You say you look significantly
this time last year. What are we in December? Now, I started losing weight in December. I would say July last year, I was 320, 325. I'm down to 270. So yeah, the goal is 250. I'll never be back down to my walk around, you know, train jujitsu 5 times a week at 235. But at 250, I can move well. I can do anything that I want to do and have, you know, my carbs, my beer, and my cigar. You know what I mean? Without any detriment,
and
really.
Not
so.
Feel terrible after spending all day on your feet walking around on the range and running and trying to stop in positions. Yeah, absolutely.
Yep. But my point to that is, you know, I've seen your videos and stuff like that. You can move, right? So here's an interesting thing, right? If you're doing 21, 22 splits and you are moving through an array as quickly as you can, that second split almost behind your movement, right? Where if you're doing 17s, 18s, it's almost with your movement. Is that what you're talking about, or did I misinterpret that?
Yeah, it's, you know, and this is something that we could almost go like way off the deep end on, because I kind of have theory on it, which is that, like, if I try to explain it, it's like, let's say I'm kind of moving laterally and I got, you know, a little space between walls and there's 3 targets. So, you know, let's say they're like 7 to 10 yards open targets. So that's things that are pretty easy to shoot. So if I was shooting like 21 split as I would come through, so it'd be like pop, 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 you know, that's about a 21 split there. I would probably have 3 foot impacts or something like that. But so you're covering a lot of like linear distance in that time, which means that you're always kind of running the risk of running up barrier to barrier. You know, so there's that component of it. And then this is one where I've talked to other guys about this, and everyone gets a little bit like, you know, red in the ass on it, which is that, like, I don't think that you want to use this as an excuse to split fast. That's not what I'm doing. But I have a theory that when you're transitioning really fast, so let's say you're doing something like, you know, tracking the A zone, if you know what that is, where you got your 4 targets and you're kind of like 1 and 3 and 2 and 4 while you're moving through the barrel of my Wanzix drills. It's really, really difficult to do correctly and really well. And so I have a theory that if you're splitting it faster, you don't have as much time to take the negative effect of incorrectly moving your eyes off of the gun too soon. Because we should be, you know, eyes on target. And obviously at some point we have to move, but it's all of our inclination is to go eyes on target and just start blasting and immediately start looking for the next thing, which is wrong, but we all do it, you know, to some amount. And so I have a theory that, like, hey, if you split quicker, still doesn't mean that I didn't do the eyes part incorrectly, but I take less negative effect potentially on targets doing that.
The deviation between looking at what you're shooting at and transitioning off becomes smaller. No, I get that. That's actually a great way to explain it. Okay. So my journey with splits recently has basically been like, look, man, based on everything I did, you know, when I used to go compete, you know, back in the day before I got super busy and everything, going back this year, in case anybody wants to know, limited optics, yo. Anyway, but they look like the guns that I carry, so I'm excited about
it. Hey, I mean, if you can afford it, man, more power to you.
There you go. Anyway, but as far as like understanding how people do things as an instructor or just a dude that loves to compete against other people in the smallest in the smallest of detail. Is there a problem that a 16, 17, 18 split can't solve? I think you're going to be hard pressed to find a problem that those things can't solve, right? But I want to understand how other people who put their pants on the same way as me can do 14s, 15s, and 16s on demand, right? Donovan Moore, Billy Barton, you know, the list goes on and on. All my friends and stuff like that that can do these amazing splits on demand, in control, you know. I honestly think if you want to do 16s and 17s under pressure, you got to learn how to do 14s and 15s. So that's what I've been doing. So that's why I asked you about it. Right. And going back to the jiu-jitsu thing, that was the thing when I was competing all the time, man, it's super hard, even on your knees and on your hands doing gi and everything like that, to go back and then be able to move that quickly. Right. Cause I don't care who you are. If you're a jiu-jitsu guy, you've been doing it for a while, you are inflamed.
Yep. and I wonder, like, you know, to your point, and I've never put a lot of emphasis on splits just because it's, you know, as far as what shows up in matches or on stages, it's a minor contributor to it. But I do wonder if, provided it's not taken away from other things that would be more valuable in your training,
sure.
I wonder if just working a lot of splitting really fast, you know, doing a lot of, like, you know, doubles drill or doing, yep, you know, whatever it happens to be, would be beneficial in, you know, trying to teach yourself, like, the hand relaxation part of it, you know, because it's the funny double-edged sword, which is that, like, you know, when you try to go really fast, you tense up your shooting hand, and then you get, you know, you get trigger freeze, you know, or whatever else, or you get, you know, either that, or you start, you know, like, you know, using your whole shooting hand to push the gun on there. So I wonder, yeah, if, you know, pursuing something like those really fast splits might just be beneficial in like more of like a pursuing the relaxation, right, of the shooting hand kind of thing. And
yeah. And I think that is the goal I'm trying to do. On the other hand, I remember something Tim Herron said to me like 7 years ago, when we were talking about the same conversation. He was like, or you can just learn how to fight through the tension. And I'm like, okay, whatever, bro. You know what I mean? and then, you know, probably the person that I have seen, you know, Donovan Moore and his 11, 12, 13 trigger finger says, I don't really relax shit. I'm like, okay. And then I got this thing, man. You ever seen this thing? The new Ace VR thing? You seen this?
No, I never have.
So this is the Ace virtual reality system. You can get two controllers. One looks like a 2011. One looks like a 320. This one doesn't explode when you drop it, though.
Hey.
And then you, hey, love you, Sig. Anyway, and then you put the controller in it, and it's pre-travel, okay, break, all that other stuff. And it's got, I'm trying not to do commercial for Ace, but they are a great company. You've got every steel challenge stage. You've got accelerator. You've got tracking the A zone. You got plate racks. You got build drills. You got paper, all that other stuff. And if you look at my stats, I've probably had this thing. I mean, I've been teaching for the past week, but since I've had this thing, I've probably put 40,000 trigger pulls through this thing. And
I mean, you just put 12 there like a second ago, you know?
Exactly. Exactly. And not even trying. 13s, 14s, and 15s are starting to come in through my demos without trying. Like this last time at Nashville at Royal Ranch, everyone's familiar with the 3-2 drill, right? Just to get gross sight picture transitions to refined sight pictures and get your trigger going. I accidentally did a 4-2, and the fourth one in the body, right, which was an accident, wound up being a 13, but it didn't feel like a 13. So doing that much of this thing with an actual trigger pull, I think it's helping me fight through that tension. So I'm that balance of relaxed and getting after it with the hand. So interesting stuff. We'll see.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, that is like, you got to push. And like one thing I noticed with the shadow too, is it's like, if I'm doing doubles drill, like, I mean, I can push them. I mean, I can get some like 14s and 15s. They're kind of the outlier ones. I mean, I can push it down there, but I've started to have splits that fast show up in like actual drills that, yeah, I'm doing, like moving and transition and stuff like that, you know, because it's like, for me, it's easier to be relaxed in those. Whereas like, I mean, I can't be the only one, but I'm like the guy where like, honestly, like, especially if I'm like teaching, I'm demoing, the drill I'm the most terrified of demoing is devil's drill, because you're only like, you've narrowed your criteria down to like, this is the only thing to do it well.
Yeah.
And then, and it's like, you know, like push one left, you're like, damn it, I look like shit. Or it's like, oh, hey, one high, one low. You're like, ah, for fuck's sake, look at what you're doing. Don't drive the gun, you know? So it's like I kind of like that because, I mean, one, obviously, like it keeps you disciplined, but it's like sometimes it's almost harder to do that drill where you're kind of purposely working on it really fast because you are putting so much mental like load, mental like effort into it. Whereas if you're just like, hey, I'm doing kind of basic, you know, entries, exits, movement, transition, or whatever, and I got a 5 yarder, you know, come around the barrel, brat. Oh, you're like, hey, cool, that one sounded real fast, you know. And
right. Right. Exactly. Cool. Awesome. So a little bit more about your background, because I don't care if you think about it or not, but so you were a Marine,
yep,
right? Lots of deployments from what I understand from my buddy Hunter Freeland. And because I guess you talked to him about it before. And then you were a D1 wrestler.
Yes. No. I went to Iowa. I didn't wrestle at Iowa.
Oh, I thought you did. No. Didn't you coach wrestling for a while?
No. So, yeah. So I was in the Marine Corps. So I was 0311, rifleman. Went to college. And then that's where I started jiu-jitsu. And I was studying to be like a strength and conditioning coach. So then I was a college strength coach at a couple of different places during my career of coaching. And then I got out of that because, man, does that career suck. But it's like all of the work and none of the time off. And just like,
Yeah. Interesting story. I don't know, the internet probably doesn't need to hear this, but so, you know, I go out, Nate Rivera, he's out there in Ames or whatnot, you know, Dakota Meyer.
Oh, I mean, I know of him. Yeah.
So I guess he's dating a girl that was one of your strength students or something like that. I wish I could remember her name. I can't remember her name.
Yeah.
So it was funny that you came up, right? Because we were talking and it's like, oh, so you do jiu-jitsu. Yeah.
Oh, you're talking about Dakota Schaefer.
Dakota Meyer.
Yeah.
Sorry,
yeah,
not Dakota like, Meyer.
Yeah. I know Dakota Schaefer, and yeah, I know his girlfriend.
Schaefer.
Yeah, she was one That's of my right. volleyball players.
First of all,
I coached, yeah.
Mike Jones, Grand Thumb. I'm sorry that I said Dakota Meyer. Anyway, moving on. The internet. Yeah, Dakota Schaefer. Okay, yeah. That's Dakota Meyer. Dakota Schaefer. So yeah, so it's funny you came up.
Like, it's close enough. I know. They both got beards, probably. You know, whatever.
Like, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. I was like, oh, that's funny. I know Lane. That's awesome, man. Cool. Okay, so what are your? So we already figured out that one helps out the other, one doesn't cannibalize the other, right? I kind of gleaned from that, which I'm starting to understand as well, is that no gi doesn't hurt his hands as much as the gi, because you're not trying to grab on as much and stuff like that. So people who don't do jiu-jitsu are like, what the fuck are you guys talking about? It's all right. Don't worry about it. Moving on. All right. So what are your aspirations right now? Like you did, what, a couple years ago at Nationals? Would you get like 10th in Carry Optics Nationals or pretty close to it?
Yeah, let's see. So I've done 4 nationals. So I went 6th, 12th, 9th, 17th the last 4 years. But my best percentage score was last year when I got 9th. So I was like 93.1, I think. And this year was a weird match. And because I was like 90 point something percent, which is a lower percent, but everybody was like guys who shot Carry Optics Nationals. It was just, I mean, it basically
it was a mud fest, right? It was a mud fest, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was that, but like the way that, you know, not to go like too far off in the weeds, but like the range, like part of it was like basically newly constructed for this. So like the gravel wasn't even compacted down. So like when it was raining, like there was like certain stages you'd sink 6-8 inches into the gravel, you know, but then the way the berms were, the side berms aren't very tall. So most of the stages, like when you actually looked at how it amounted, it was almost just like shooting boxes. Cause I mean, yeah, it was an open shooting area, but they didn't have very much as far as targets on your side berms. So most of what you were doing was go here, shoot some things, run, but not able to do anything, get to the next spot, then shoot some things. There was only a couple stages where you were actually able to really incorporate any real, like, you know, potential shooting and moving and shooting between positions and stuff like that. So I remember I was sitting after the first 2 days, I was sitting like 97 something percent. And my goal was to shoot, 95 to 97% at nationals. And then day 3 was, for me, it was a disaster. I don't know what it was. I've tried to kind of figure it out. I have a couple of theories, but it was just like, it was like, I was never I couldn't like get going. I ran a couple good stages. There's a couple of stages I'd intended to purposely shoot conservatively because they weren't very big, weren't worth a lot of points, but they were kind of like high disaster potential. And like my conservative became way too conservative. So it basically became like I had shot a Mike's or something on them anyways. You know, one of them was like a 30 yard strong hand only, you know, four rounds, high wind. The wind was blowing me around. So just a, kind of a disaster. But so it was like the percentage was much lower than I wanted, but I think I roughly finished essentially performance wise, you know, where I was the last couple of years, maybe slightly lower than that. So, yeah, I mean, I would absolutely, the way I kind of figure it for myself is, you know, I think if you're at 95% or above at a major, I think you're like legitimately kind of in the hunt, wherever that puts you at, you know, placement wise. I don't care about placement whatsoever. I care about percentage because you can't pick and choose who shows up, you know, to the match. So, yeah, I need to shoot above 95% at, you know, at nationals, and I still need to win an area match. I kind of had my chance last year at area four. It came up a little short there, and then I got DQ'd from area three this year, so that didn't happen. You know, and so yeah, still need to win an area match. Haven't pulled that off yet. Need to finish 95% or better at Carry Optics Nationals.
As a side note, which is you started competing in 2016-17, right? Because I remember you and I were going back and forth on stuff about, because I think you made Master maybe a couple months before I did and stuff like that, and then, you know, things.
Yeah, I remember because you called me, because I think it was when you were about to get your M class. Because you called me, because I think I just picked up GM, and you were having issues where, like, you thought you were going to have to put in a, like,
because you had to do that.
Your score. Yeah, because I had to do that with my initial classification. Yep.
Yeah, that's right. Okay. So, yeah, so, guys, we're looking at, effectively, if you go back to 2016, 7-8 years to get to the level that he's at right now. So that's awesome. So what are your goals for shooting, man? Like before, when you get through competition, it's like, hey, maybe I want to get this classification. Maybe I want to win a local in my, you know, my classification, and then the overall division, and then, you know, sectional, regional, and then, you know, place, you know, top 10 at nationals. You've done all that. So what are your aspirations? I mean, do you have the aspirations to actually win nationals?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, honestly, for me, it's basically percentage based. You know, like, you know, if I have to be 100% honest with myself, like I'm 38, you know, there's a lot of younger dudes coming in that are, you know, at or around my level. Like, it's going to be exceptionally difficult to win that going forward. So, you know, like I'm focused more on like, hey, you know, shooting, like, you know, if I shoot 95%, you know, or better at nationals, you know, that's, I mean, one, that's extremely good. You're kind of in the hunt for the match there. So that's kind of what I'm working on with that. And then winning an area match is still, I mean, certainly, you know, a feasible thing. So, I'd like to win an area match because, that'd be a pretty big feather in the cap with how competitive they've become on that. So, I mean, that's basically the only thing I have kind of left, you know, is like performance wise. And I kind of, you know, it's definitely like a big time, like long shot on like, you know, when they went away from production optics heavy and production optics light, when they still had light, you know, the guys, so like Luke, you know, Cal, who won it, like Luke's a very good shooter. Like Luke and I have gone back and forth at every match we've ever shot. So, you know, in my head, I was like, you know, it's very feasible to make the world team shooting production optics light, but then that went away. So then now production optics is exactly as competitive as Carry Optics Nationals. So, and then I wasn't able to go to IPSC Nationals in the fall. It was just, you know, where it was down in Florida, like travel stuff was just, it was too expensive. And then, so there is IPSC Nats in April coming up. So I need to get one of those. Cause the way they do it is they basically take your USPSA national score for 2 years, your IPSC national score for 2 years, and they take your best three percentage finishes, add them together and average them out. And, you know, to kind of figure up their slots. So, I mean, actually making the, you know, the selected world team is, that's a little too much of an ask, but you know, I was like, hey, I want to get some points on there, do well enough that like, hey, then once they kind of come up with the sort of like, you know, unattached slots or something like that, you know, to get one of those. Cause it's, you know, shooting at Worlds shoot would be cool. Cause it's like one, you know, you can't place at Worlds if you don't go to Worlds, you know, kind of right. thing. And, but now, man, like, I don't know if you keep up with it, but USPSA is a dumpster fire behind a gay brothel right now. It is just
Of course, I keep up with it.
You know, and it's like,
even if I don't want to keep up with it, people.
Yeah, and it's like, so I'm waitlisted on IPSC Nationals coming up for 2024. So I mean, I kind of don't think that I'm going to get allowed into that match. So I won't even technically be able to qualify, you know, for any of that because I won't have any IPSC scores. I'm waitlisted for Area One. It's just like, I don't know, the major matches, you know, and then with them, when they moved Nationals up to June versus having it be like September, October, like everything else, most of the country went haywire trying to move matches around because it's like, hey, this messes with everybody's schedule, but also trying to get some major matches that people all across the country are able to do to prepare for Nationals. So it's, you know, it's one of those like, it's become harder just in the last 2 years to do that. Cause it used to be like, you kind of knew it was like, you know, you knew when like Area Four, Area Three, Nationals, all that stuff was. So it's like picking those out and going to matches was no problem. But now all of those have moved to different times. Like my buddy, like Tanfo Timmy and I, we flew out to North Carolina last year to go to Area Six in May, either May or May, I think, you know, and it's like, otherwise it's like, I mean, it was a good match, very good match, you know, but it's like, that is very logistically difficult compared to me driving to Oklahoma to shoot Area Four, you know?
Right. So what do you think it's going to take you to get to be consistent 95? It's just not, it's like, I have all the skill I need right now. I just can't make mistakes, right? Or is there a skill set that you somehow need to acquire, whether it be more of your own training, figure something out, or are you planning on going training with other people, and who might that be?
No, that's a good question. And this is something I tried to address last year to varying levels of success, which is that, like, I think, and I don't say this in like a bragging way, like I think I can basically shoot like what I did in 2022, which was like 93% at Nationals. I think I can basically shoot at that level, you know, pretty much any day, like once I'm in, you know, competition season. But when you start wanting to, you know, beat Nils and JJ, you know, and Max and, you know, Christian and all those guys, I think I have to shoot way more into or close to the wobble zone. So I think that like 90 to 93%, I think it's, don't get me wrong, like I'm pushing, but I think it's like that level of pushing where you're comfortable. Well, I think I'm going to have to operate more in like not being comfortable, you know, to be, you know, a little quicker on that. So I tried to address that, you know, and I don't know if this is smart, but this was like what I tried, you know, kind of last year. And I think I'm going to do a little bit of this year was, you know, prior to Nationals last year, my plan was basically to shoot every match 5 or 10% too hard, like, you know, be okay with making some mistakes, but to have times that were within a couple seconds of the guys who are just stupid fast, you know, like Christian's and JJ's, Max, you know, those guys, or Nils, whatever.
Yeah.
Guys who are just like stupid fast. So I went and shot, I went to Dragon's Cup. I got DQ'd from Dragon's Cup last year. That one was, I mean, it was iffy, you know, I'm not quite as mad about that one. The Area 3 one was just pure BS, but anyways. But so I
shot. Are you the guy that where you were coming across and you're like this, and the guy goes stop, and it was like wasn't even close to the 180? Was that you? Was that somebody
else? Well, I don't know. There's one you might be thinking of. I think it was Hunter Constantine.
Oh, it was Hunter.
Across,
it
was and
Hunter.
He was reloading. Yeah. Mine was basically I was backing up and coming around a wall, and the target is on the one. It's like on the 179.9 as you come around the wall. But like I think I came around with the gun, and then put it around. And my plan was, and this is, you can't really tell in the video, my plan was to keep both hands on the gun, but then as I come around was to tip the muzzle down so I didn't have to break grip because it was such a very close transition, very tight transition. So they dinged me on that. That was my fourth stage. And so Dragon's Cup is more or less an area match, and you know, it's like 14 stages. So I ran the first three stages like very well. Like one of them, I still had a stage win because this is another story. So they DQ'd me, but they didn't actually DQ me. So my scores were still up, one of which is a stage win, you know, down there. So that's a whole cluster in and of itself. Yeah. But,
that completely fucked everybody's scores up.
Yeah. Because I was the high, you know, now the way it worked out, I think, I think it was Mason was second. So the way that it worked out, it wouldn't have actually bumped anybody else's scores to change the overall or anything. But it has the potential to, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I ran those first three stages like very well. Like I was moving fast, but like was doing well. And my plan, like I said, was to, you know, I don't want to say it like, oh, I was just going, you know, like, you know, purposely trying to make like, no, I'm trying to purposely go 10% too hard, like too fast. I did that when I went to Area 6. Area 6, my times were fantastic. My hips, you know, led a little something to be desired. I had some deltas. The thing that killed me there was I had two malfunctions on different stages that between the two of them cost me about 5% of match points. So that was huge. So, you know, I felt like kind of okay coming off of those, but like I felt like really like unsatisfied because I feel like I got Dragon's Cup kind of taken away from me. So then I come into like my next match was I think it was Great Plains section. And that was kind of my plan again, was like, hey, go 10% too fast. And honestly, like last year, you know, and I've talked to the match director about this just when we were like talking. So I'm not like, you know, talking behind his back or anything. It's just like, I didn't really like the stages because the way they had it set up, it was kind of like there was only really one way to run the stages. It was really like not a lot of like, you couldn't really shoot between. So it was a hard match to try to go fast. And I tried to go fast and so took some mistakes. Same thing for Cornhusker. My plan was to have Cornhusker be the first match that I tried to shoot. Like, hey, this is 2 weeks before Nationals. Now shoot this like it's a match that you care about. But with how poorly those had gone, I was like, screw it. I'm still going to go like, you know, balls out. Went really balls out on that. Had some, you know, mistakes and stuff from that. Last minute signed up for Kansas Free State, which was the week in between Cornhusker and Nationals. And then I was like, okay, you need to actually shoot this match like you mean it. And I did. And I shot very well there. Like one of the, so Scott Brown, the younger of the Brown brothers, the guy who won limited nationals was down there shooting carry optics. So very good competitor, like very, very highly skilled shooter. So, you know, had a couple guys to push me down there. So I felt like that, I mean, that was my plan anyways, was to like, to shoot locals and to shoot some like lesser quote unquote major matches, but purposely treat it a little bit like training where it's like, hey, I'm going to go a little bit too hard. You know, I need to feel a little uncomfortable on the stage. I need to feel a little bit like I'm in the wobble zone because I think that's what I have to do to try to be more competitive with those guys. And then we got to Nationals and honestly, it was just, I mean, you know, performance, you know, is always my fault, but it's like, if you were going to design a Nationals for me to not do as well, you would have had something like last year. Cause it was like very, very tight partials, not really being rewarded for your mobility, you know, that much. Mm-hmm. Whereas the two previous to that, which were at Talladega, were much more favorable to somebody like me, you know, it's still like partials and stuff, but lots of ability to like kind of use your physical movement and shooting on the move and stuff. And, you know, so it's kind of, but that, I mean, that's, you know, it's the game that you play, you know?
Yep. Okay. So, goals in jiu-jitsu, what you got there?
Man, I just need to compete more. Like I wanted to do, Nogi Worlds this year. And so it's about, I don't know, early November or something like that, you know, and we had like several guys, like a decent number of guys from the club going. And so my buddy, my coach, John is like, you know, hey, you want to do it? And I was kind of like, it's like, I want to do it, but it's like, I can't really afford it. But like, I want to do it. So I was like, all right, screw it. I'm going to pick it up the next 2 weeks real hard, you know, in the gym conditioning wise and, you know, jiu-jitsu, you know, as far as jiu-jitsu wise as well. And just kind of, you know, assume that I'm going and then sign up after that. Started picking it up. And I, have you ever had tennis elbow before?
I've had the symptoms of tennis elbow, but the reason why a tennis elbow is because fighting off too many arm bars.
But it's like, I hate the word tennis elbow because it sounds like the lamest thing
ever. It does.
But I started getting it last year, like 2022, really bad. And so I go and get dry needle and get a lot of treatment on it. And this year, kind of same thing, but it had been under control. And when I picked it up for those 2 weeks, it flared up worse than it's ever been. I mean, to the point where, like, when I would try to pick up, like, a monster, like an energy drink can, like, it would just be, like, could barely pick it up. And I was like, shit, you know. So I was like, all right. So I immediately run out. So I've got, like, my chiropractor guy that does my dry needling. I'm like, all right, I'm going to go out there as many days a week as you're, like, I don't know, like, legally, like, morally allowed to do it, you know, and get that stuff done. And it just – I couldn't get it to go away. So, I mean, I basically didn't, you know, like, I mean, I participated in class so far as I like, you know, taught technique and stuff, but I didn't like roll for like a couple of weeks trying. And I was like, I'm not prepared for
can't
this.
Can't do you that. Know? Yeah. You can't do that. You just got to, yeah.
And it sucks because it's like, if it wasn't in Las Vegas, you know, if it was in like Kansas City and I could drive there, you know, or whatever else, but it's like, I don't want to pay $1,000 worth of travel and entry fee and stuff and not feel like I'm ready to rock and roll. Cause you never know. Like, I mean, especially like, you know, someone like me who doesn't have like, you know, a ton of points in the system or whatever, I'm going to go against the number one or the number two seed guy in the bracket, like first round, you know, which is fine. But it's like, if I do that, like I want to feel like I'm, you know, at least prepared for it, you know, if not,
you know,
capable of beating him sometimes, you know, but
Yeah, you don't want to spend all that money in the fee and travel just to compete once and get a really expensive ticket for the rest of the tournament, right? Yeah.
Well, and awesome. Guys who have done, you know, especially IBJJF tournaments, they're all single elimination and they don't do a true third. So it's like you go out there, you lose in the first round, you're done. Like that's done. It. There's no bottom side of the bracket, no nothing. Yep.
Yep. You're bringing back memories of Pan Am's for me. Man. Anyway, so the last question I want to add, well, actually, there's two more questions, but the last one I want to kind of ask you is because, like, you know, we've talked about this before, right? You float and inhabit both sides, right? Both the tactical Timmy part, right, and the gamer part, right? We have friends on both sides of everything, right? Some people. There's great people on both sides. There's assholes on both sides, right? How do you balance that, right? Because do you teach competitive classes? You do. You teach competitive classes, right? But yeah. I know that you also teach entangled, you know, combatives mixing with knives and guns and stuff like that. So how do you balance the two or the two sides of, you know, the industry and yada yada?
I mean, you know, honestly, it's a little tough, you know, because I teach more of my combative classes than I do of pure like shooting classes, but I do both. And it is really tough because, you know, it's funny. Like I trained, there's a group of guys that went to your class down here was probably 2 years ago now. And I trained, a subset of them, back in the spring. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so it was like, and it was funny cause we had a few issues, like were things I was saying, they're like, oh, well, like Scott told us to do this. And I'm like, I almost guarantee that when Scott said to stand up straight, he didn't mean to just stand up really, really straight. He just meant don't bend over and do tactical Timmy stuff. I mean, I can't put words
that's
in his
exactly.
mouth. Yeah. But that's I'm like, exactly, you know, what it was fun. I was just having him do a drill. Like I call it like blind transitions, you know? So I kind of had a like vision barrier, like how to move, you know, shoot a couple targets, move 2 yards around barrels, and then have a couple, you know, targets that I got to transition to. And I was like, hey, when you get there, spread your feet, drop your butt, like, you know, look like you played sports before. So that was kind of a funny like component of that because I was being too gamer with it. But I was like, I would almost guarantee he didn't tell you to stand there like a statue, you know, but.
Or they just don't understand the context of it. Right. Well, I was like, hey man, Isosceles, lean forward, arms locked out. Why are you doing that? Stop doing that. That's what I mean, right? Because within the context of it, you're doing all this extra stuff that you don't need to do. Let's just shoot the gun in the most comfortable way possible. Then stand we can there. Add context.
Yep. Just stand there with your head straight up and shoot. That's yeah.
Yeah.
That's
and you're also not not trying to stop.
Yeah. Either. Yeah. And right. that's a whole other can of worms, like dealing with that. But no, it's honestly, it's difficult because I think, you know, you're always fighting for credibility within a group so that you can get them to want to bring you out to train or to get them just to come show up when you're training or something like that. So it's like one, you know, I think you try to present the information, you know, with that. You know, try to get people to come to the range and see. It's like, hey, you know, and this is like basically like, you know, my class, I just kind of call it like a, you know, it's like an applications class is kind of the way I think of like my combative stuff. Cause it's like, hey, obviously I'm very in favor of wrestling and jujitsu and boxing and all that, very in favor of going and doing super gamer shit on the range, but it's like, okay, now what's the application of that? You know,
right.
We're talking about like, you know, you or me carrying, cop carrying, military dude, whatever, you know. You know, so kind of like, okay, like apply, you know, like applied skills when it comes to that. So it's, you know, it's balancing that. And in some ways I think that's, you know, I definitely, when I first started doing USPSA, it wasn't my intention to get super serious about the sport itself, but I was a little bit interested in getting good enough at it that I had like some credentials that I could kind of point to if I was teaching class,
yeah.
Which in hindsight, you know, it sounds super lame when you say it, you know, now after having done it for, you know, a few years, but, you know, it's like, you know, try to get people to, you know, try to get them to show up to matches, you know, hey, like see some of these guys like shooting in action a little bit like that, or like, hey, you know, come to the gym, you know, or if there's guys that, you know, like I have like some of my buddies, one of my really good, you know, friends, good training partners is now going through Omaha's Police Academy. So he's been like, you know, like a direct conduit. He's brought a couple of people, like he's trying to get people to come to class, you know, and stuff like that. So I think that's good. And then also is like, you know, point to, you know, point to other people on that stuff and maybe just like, you know, and so I've kind of started to try to do this a little bit, like being a little bit better at marketing is like, okay, trying to pull up like real world, like, you know, Ring camera stuff, show some shit going down, and then either make a video about it or show older videos that I've done, or like dealing with, like, I did one the other day where I just, you know, dealing with like basic fence position kind of stuff, you know, getting people to see where, like, you know, the basic wrestling or the basic grappling or the basic boxing or whatever you want to, you know, call it, like, is connected to that. And, but no, it is tough. And I think one thing, like, so my buddy John, who's our head black belt, him and I talk about this a lot, because I find it's difficult once you're like on the inside of like a highly skilled endeavor, whatever it happens to be. In this case, you know, we're talking jiu-jitsu and shooting. And then when you talk to people who, you know, oh, they know somebody who shoots, or, hey, you know, they're on, like, you know, the police force, so they've gone and done a couple, like, you know, cop shoots, and so they know this guy who's really skilled. And it's like damn it, it's like, how do you break through to them to be like, hey, like, you know, those people are, while they're probably doing something positive, is like getting them to recognize like where the bar really is on stuff.
Yeah.
I struggle with this, like trying to get people, because I think cops are super guilty of this, is like getting them to come hang out with people shooting wise that aren't cops. You know, it's difficult, you know, to kind of be like, hey, just come shoot with some of us gamer like dudes out here. And I have a good friend of mine, Rob. Like, Rob, he hosted me for classes. He owns his own range. He's a firefighter. He's like one of the captains, like around here or whatever. And he does his own, he shoots USPSA with us. He's an A-class guy, very good dude. And he also runs his own kind of like running guns with, so he's got like, mm-hmm, a fair number of like the local cops, local firemen guys who go out there. So I think stuff like that is really good to try to be like, hey, if you get him to go out to a couple running guns, maybe now you can get him to come down to, the Eastern Nebraska Gun Club and come shoot a legit match and that. And I mean, obviously, like, you know, you've got more, like, more experience of, you know, as far as like crossing over on that. So I should be asking you, like, hey, how'd you get these people to be like, sure, come on in, jiu-jitsu guy, and teach a red dot class, you know? But
yeah. So I'll give you my formula. It comes from business. Tell people who you are, tell them what you've done, tell them what you're going to do for them, and then do it. And then keep constantly reminding them, right? You know, the videos that I did that I just,
yeah,
you know, that's the thing. Everyone's like, well, I'm not a good marketer, you know, or actually people like shit on marketing in this industry and stuff. Well, if they don't know what you teach, why should they come to your class? And they've got this, like, this bravado of, and, you know, God bless all of my, you know, special operations mill guys with this quiet professional, which I wish some of them would be more quiet. But that being said, I don't do the marketing, then cool, then they're not going to come to your class. They don't know. Resumes only go so far, especially now. Again, I have lots of friends that are Ranger, Green Beret, Delta guys. I love every single one of you. I've learned a lot from you and stuff like that, right? But there's thousands of you now. Right? What sets you apart from the other guy in the teams, the groups, and the, you know, and this, what, you know, you got to tell them what you got to tell them, what you know, and what you're going to do it and how you're going to do it. And that's it. You do a very good job on videos, by the way. They are highly technical, which I like, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I know I'll look at some, I won't bore the audience with it, but I'll give you some feedback on it. The other thing is, guys, is like kind of donating your time a little bit, you know, to a certain extent. If you want cops to come to your class, right, you have to get in with the bigger organizations, OTOA, the Ohio Tactical Police Association, TTPOA, you know, Texas Tactical Police Officer Association, and different things like that, which I'm more than happy to introduce you to them. And donate your time, and then the word just starts going from there and there, and then there's just a point of time where you somehow, based on you do what you tell them you're going to do, and they learn something, and then you get this credibility, right? And you get that, and you just start trucking from there, and then people try and break you down because you're at the higher level. whatever. It's just you know, it's humans and stuff like that,
right?
So
a little, yeah, competition never hurt anybody, but
no, and neither does vigorous disappointment or disappointment. I'm sorry, vigorous disagreement.
Hey, disappointment comes with
both. Too, yeah, you know? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, vigorous disagreement and stuff like that, you know, and kind of going from there.
No, I think, you're right. Well, and you and I had kind of had this, you know, talk. I think we were texting or whatever, you know, back when there was like my shooting circles always have drama all over them. So, you know, it's you know, it's whatever. But, you know, it's like I'm, you know, we kind of talked about like I'm so on board with people butting heads because if nothing else, there's no way we can exist in an industry where everybody agrees on everything. That's to me, that's like the scariest thing is if there's,
yeah,
if there's no difference from anybody anywhere, then I'm like, this can't be it. Like we can't, not everybody can be like, right. You know,
sure.
Not everything, you know, whether it's, you know, an actual technique or whether it's methodology or, you know, or whatever, like insert jujitsu this, it's like, there's everybody knows arm bars and Kimuras and stuff, but it's like, you know, maybe we differ on how we structure practice. Should we start with this? Should we end with that? Yeah. You know, I mean, right. Things like that, I think are, and that's where I think the, you know, the marketplace of ideas is.
Yeah. And just like, you know, I've been doing jujitsu since 96, off and on, you know, I was the 12 year purple belt, before I got my brown belt and stuff like that. But it's like, you know, when I was growing, I was like, bro, no leg locks, no wrist locks. That's not beautiful jujitsu. Don't do it. Now, if you don't have a leg lock game, man, you shouldn't just don't compete. Or at least if you don't know leg locks, you don't know how to shut them down, you shouldn't compete. So it's interesting how that goes, right? It's like in USPSA. Again, I have not been that active because, well, you know, I'm not speaking out of hubris. You can look this up. I taught 103 classes this year, and most of them are on the weekends. When am I going to get to compete? You know, not that I don't want to, and I'm going to be coming back. But it's so funny, right? 5 years ago, shooting USPSA will get you killed in the streets. Now, USPSA is the streets, right? I had a guy to me the other day. It's like, hey, man, you teach gimmicks and shit. I'm like, what are you talking about, teach gimmicks? They had the whole 1 second draw thing. I go, first of all, I have different tiers in my classes depending on your skill level, but why not get a 1 second draw, right? Just because a quick draw is not important at USPSA because of the way it's set up, that doesn't mean it's not applicable in the streets. We've always said first round on target usually is the best thing in a fight. So how can you say it's not important? You know what I mean? So, well,
and I think there, like, that's an interesting point. Cause I was, you know, I took like Craig Douglas's ECQC class here, and I've done it before. And then him and I, you know, we kind of talk, you know, offline, you know, occasionally,
sure,
I'll ask him questions and stuff. And he had brought something up, you know, you might've seen it, you know, he brought a video where he was, you know, he's got a whole bunch, I'm going to say his words wrong, but he, you know, it's like weaponizing language for like tactical outcome thing. And there's like, you know, so he's kind of talking about like, hey, you know, like when you're trying to, like, let's say draw like a pocket gun, you know, and like use that, you know, versus like going real quick. And so him and I kind of talked, and I kind of put a video up of me like having my, you know, I carry my snub nose revolver. Like it's my going to jujitsu and coming home from jujitsu gun. And I freaking love that thing. But, you know, so I've got it, like, you know, in my hoodie pocket or whatever, and I just put it on a timer, you know, beep, bang, and it's like, you know, 0.5 or something, you know, it's stupid fast, you know, and then him and I were kind of talking, and this is like, you know, to your point, like what people miss is it's like, can I mechanically, according to that, can I mechanically get a revolver out of my pocket and shoot somebody in the face at 3 yards in a half a second or faster? Yep, done it. Now, is that exactly, like, is that the social or whatever the situational like application of it, you know, and it's like, okay, no, but it's like, you're using a mechanical skill, a mechanical, like representation or example that then, and this is like the point of like, once you go past shooting, then you need to get into like, you know, kind of the force on force related stuff, whatever you want to talk about. Okay. Now, how do you actually apply mechanics to situation, to social, social, you know, cues and that stuff. And that's what I think is interesting, and that's where people like miss that, you know, because it's like, I think you could absolutely spend too much time working on just getting a sub-second draw, and there's definitely people who waste training time doing that, but then there's equally people who miss. They're like, hey, if I could do, you know, a 1 second or a 1-1 draw when I'm pushing pretty hard but not going balls to the wall, okay, 1.5 seconds should be really easy to do, and then now that becomes like a, oh, hey, yeah, you know, I think she was over that way. Oh, okay, cool. you know, and then you kind of, you know, you can, you know, add the application to, you know, situation versus I think a lot of people's brain goes to like, okay, what they mean is that I'm going to go and beep, like, you know, like that, right. You're, you know, that's how you use it in real life or whatever, but.
Yeah. Or, you know, I tell people like the 1 second shot is not what we're going for. It's sights on target in 0.75 and decide whether or not that extra quarter second or more, if you actually need to pull that trigger. But if your minimum capacity is you can't get that gun up in 2 seconds, are you behind the power curve or not? I'd rather have that surplus of skill than not, you know?
Yeah. And this is, and I deal with this kind of in the combatives community, cause I'm the black sheep in that, because I'm not somebody who was like a jiu-jitsu guy who's kind of getting into guns and trying to teach guns, or a gun only guy who's now trying to get into combatives. Like, I do both very seriously. And I've had this problem with, you know, some of the, you know, instructors or personnel sometimes, and that is like, hey, cause they'll always bring up like, you know, well, it's not the beep, it's the before the beep. And I'm like, you're absolutely right. But there's a before, during, and after, the beep, you know? So it's like at some point, regardless of what you're doing, you know, fight, let's say, I know, whatever, you and I are locked up, we're doing something, this or that, all that's before the beep. However, when there is the beep, that is, that still represents some amount of time. If we can make that amount of time less, or if we can just make that more consistent, like I might trade a little bit of like pure raw speed for like, this is infallible, you know, then that's perfectly reasonable. And I think that's where people kind of, they can run themselves astray real quick, you know, where it's like, you know, getting too much into that.
I'll tell you, and here's a cool crossover. Let's see what you think about that. So my professor, Vicente Jr., he's in Maryland. He's a Dale Oliva black belt, world champ, yada, yada. Anyway, he's the jiu-jitsu guy that got into shooting. And we start talking about it. And I've kind of been his coach and mentor through that, right? And when, you know, I say sooner, not faster, yada, yada, why, know why you do things, everything. So the classic thing, you know, when you come up in a match, right, you slap and dap, and then you choose to take 2 steps back, right? And we were talking about, like, so I realized something, you know, because we had a little, I think he had like a little in-house tournament at his school and stuff. And instead of slapping and dapping and taking 2 steps back, we slapped and dapped, and I got my grips. And the guy was like, what the fuck, right? You know what I mean? And then I single-legged him, and then, you know, and then choked him out. I was like, yeah, why are you doing, you know, sooner, not faster? Why are we doing things? We're doing things out of tradition or whatever. No, let's get those efficiencies down. And the way to do that is, A, get the mechanics, figure out the practical application, and get better, and get better.
Well, and that's the classic martial arts thing. I think Ben Askren was the one who like said it when I first heard it. But like Ben Askren, famously a fantastic wrestler, and like dad bod, really slow, like doesn't look like anything special. But he took everybody down. He still holds like the NCAA record for pins in a season, or maybe pins in a career. You know, they call him the rubber man or whatever. And he's really slow. But how does he take everyone down? Well, you can be slow if you have good timing. You know? So it's like, you know, like to your point, it's like, it's not strictly about going from A to B as fast as possible. It's about like, you know, timing that. I mean, in this case with opponent's movements, but it's like everything that you do to get yourself in preparation for that. And then, you know, same thing with your continuing after the beep, like, you know, kind of things on that. It's like if you and I shoot, like there's not going to probably be any difference between how fast we could mechanically make the gun go bang, but it's like, what determines, you know, the outcome after that is all of the other stuff that goes with it. It's like, you know, hey, you know, your other skills, you know, tied into that.
Yep. Exactly. Cool. Awesome, man. Tell everybody where they can find you, man. What's the name of your company? What classes do you teach? Where can they find you, brother?
So my company name is Bastion Black Performance. I've got all the usual Instagram and Facebook and, you know, bastionblackperformance.com and stuff. And yeah, and I teach, like I said, my main class is, you know, I call them combative solutions. I primarily do like combative handgun solutions, but it's, for me, it's basically like, I just kind of view it as like a 0 to 5 yard, you know, basically like direct application. Cause it's like, hey, that's, you know, if you use Tom Gibbons data, which I love Tom Gibbons, you know, data on, you know, civilian involved, you know, shootings and stuff, is like, hey,
so, OG man, what, 64?
I think it's like 82 or something now, but yeah.
Yeah.
It's like one pause. It's like almost no instructors ever have anybody that uses that. And that dude's got 82 people, but anyways, which is ridiculous. But, you know, so I kind of use his data plus just my own, you know, eyes and ears, which is like, hey, most of your problems, you know, seem to happen basically between, you know, touching distance and the end of a car length. That's roughly where they happen. So it's like, hey, that involves everything up to, you know, you and I touching each other, fighting, wrestling, punching, biting, whatever, to like, hey, once you start 3 and 5 yards, now you're starting to really very quickly get into like the pure skill application of the gun. Like you can absolutely mm-hmm. miss it. I mean, I've missed it that distance in matches, you know, plenty before. Then I teach, you know, like I just call it, you know, basically pistol performance, you know, like, hey, you got a gun, be better at shooting it. You know, as far as, you know, whatever your applications may be. But yeah.
Cool. Outstanding. All right, guys. Hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. I actually don't care if you enjoyed it because I enjoyed it. And that's why I do my podcast. Anyway, Lane, appreciate you coming back out there, brother. Keep killing it, man. I'll have all of his contact stuff for IG and all that other stuff down there. Guys, if you're in Nebraska, right, Omaha major area, basically, right? go train with them, man. Learn how to do it all the ranges, right, whether it be with your gun, your knife, your hands, your feet, you know, choking people out. Learn how to do it, man. It's a good time. So that being said, guys, appreciate you joining me. Be good, stay safe, get more training.